This is Videorama, and we're going to sham-a-lam-a-ding-dong on the ring wrong, because we're talking about movies that someone called hysterically about wanting to have folks learn the wrong lesson. So what better wrong lesson could you want to learn than bringing back your dead kids? Because that's already something you shouldn't have. And by that, I mean kids. Because the world doesn't need them. We're overpopulated. Think
I don't have them.
That's right. Because you're progressively on topic.
Burn in hell, you child killer.
But I'm also one of those people that believes there should be a generated by the state mandated and very much needed
This is
IQ test
scary place,
before so. You're allowed to have children.
What, I mean, you tell me I can't have 16 kids? Is that what you're trying to tell me? You think
that
you're better
than
me?
That is what I and the government should be telling you.
Identified cousin? Shoot, but, government come up in here, tell me what to do with my kids.
Yes, and speaking of telling you what to do with your kids, we're going to be talking about Pet Sematary.
Sematary.
Yes, and now that we have a very so-so, not really liking it remake, I can say this is now my favorite Pet Sematary.
Gee whiz. I didn't see the so-so remake, so. Who the hell are you?
It's something. I don't know. I'm someone that goes down the roads that you really shouldn't go down.
You go down on roads?
Hell yeah. Mother
Randy Rhodes.
Gonna love herself.
I'm a guy in short shorts with a head injury who just shows up in your bedroom.
Oh, I thought you were going for a Tom Petty.
Or Adrian.
I'm a boy in short pants. Oh. My name is Linda, but yeah, I don't know.
Can we call you Road Cheese?
Call me the cheese. Road Cheese.
That's right, Strange Off, classic man, road cheese.
Hell yeah. Ain't nobody go down on that road cheese.
My brother makes the best head cheese. And my eyes and ligaments.
Hey, y'all not gonna do that.
So, for the uninitiated, Pet Sematary is a wonderful film about a family moving out into the middle of nowhere, yet somehow close enough to town, but far enough that people don't want to visit you, on the only stretch of road that truckers do trucker speed, and there is no speed limit, because those trucks go running day and night, slamming, jamming through everything that comes in sight, because brakes just don't work that well on a truck.
Like Adrian.
Yes.
Slamming, jamming.
I do be slamming, man.
That's why everything he has it comes on his hot pants. It just says slamming and jamming. Right across the butt.
I was thinking the other day, why aren't there like juicy pants for men? Like the sweatpants with juicy on the ass. I guess it's juicy couture.
Yeah,
I don't want any pants, it's just chaps. You know.
Maybe it's shape. But yes, this family moves out there and they're next to a road because that's where you want to raise your family when you have two little baby kids, right next to the busiest road possible that everyone knows kills anything that gets caught on there. And we get Herman Munster as their wonderful neighbor who likes to tell them very cheerfully about how many animals die there all the time. Enough so that they should have a cemetery for the kids to put their pets, because they need to learn about death, even though the mom doesn't want us to learn about death.
It's a good place.
Yeah.
It's a very good. Very
Why
good
should place. They learn that? I never did.
She
never
definitely
mind
learned
that
it.
I
Star Trek Next Generation.
Yes, because this movie unites the stars of the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation and Time Tracks.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
the star.
But you may recognize Fred Gwynne from his most notable role in My Cousin Vinny as the judge. Yeah. Nothing else. Or in The Cotton Club.
Or The Cotton
Nothing
Club.
Else.
Yeah.
I got your watch, Bob Hoskins. I hope that's all right.
Yeah, nobody's here that was alive to watch the monsters, unless you had time during the pandemic and decided I'm gonna rewatch this classy show.
The monsters, I don't watch
my TV when I was a little boy in the '80s.
We did watch a lot of the Munsters, and I could talk a lot about the Munsters and how they changed.
Like over 100 VHS episodes of Dark Shadows growing up, and we could talk about that for days.
I was just thinking the other day about the time when, because they always had like the closing credits on like focused on like a part in the house, and then one day the guy who played Roger just like crossed by. He's just walking by. He goes,
yeah, and so did Barnabas. He just had to freeze back there in the background, like, oh shit, you're doing the credits thing.
And then had the random color episodes, and this green screen would be about as good as Linda.
Yeah.
Oh. What? Well,
we live in a universe where people...
I live down the other side of the video store.
What are you talking about? We're in a video store. I don't have a video green screen.
With a country music section.
So this section of the movie, or at least the whole movie, lives in a universe where everyone listens to the Ramones religiously, apparently. Because even truckers who love speeding over 90 miles an hour on road love listening to songs by the Ramones.
Every long-haul CDL driver I've ever met has just loved that Sheila is a punk rocker song. Yeah.
Now, one of the first mistakes we learn in this film that goes over really subtly, and I mean super, super subtly, is, oh my gosh, this little girl, her kitty cat named Church after Winston Churchill, is dead. Dead as can be. And old man Munster says, I don't want to upset your daughter on a birthday, so let's go reanimate your cat and go play some Devil's Advocate, because why not? And they reanimate Miss Pussycat and, well, Miss
In the Indian burial ground.
Yeah. They bring him in, they don't bring him to a pet cemetery, they bring him to an Indian burial ground.
It's behind the pet cemetery, so maybe it should have been called Behind the Pet further. Cemetery.
You have to respect Church's chosen gender identity.
Well, Church does have some gender issues later, because as the girl says, they're getting his nuts snipped. So that was to help keep him from being so roamy, because tomcats don't want to roam when they're...
Okay.
He's a romantic Russian blue. You know, he's a lover, not a fighter.
I love Russian blues, but I gotta say, like, I know, like, as a cat owner, I know how, like, some cats just, you know, they'll drive you nuts before until you let them outside. But still, like, if you have such a busy road with, like, a bunch of trucks going at, like, full speed, maybe keep your cat inside.
That would be a good idea, to keep indoor cats only. Yes.
Well,
make them scratch at the door all they want, but like, if you let your cat out, you're gonna have a dead kitty. Like,
maybe
I don't
if
care
you're,
if its nuts are snipped.
Maybe also if you're gonna move 1,000 miles from Chicago to rural Maine, you should maybe like overlook the property first, check it out, be like, oh, this is a good central located near schools and stuff. Like, oh look. Semi trucks shoot by here every 30 seconds at 90 miles an hour, and I have tiny children. This is a great idea.
See, that just now reminded me how great this would be if Nicolas Cage had played the main lead character in this. That would have been
wonderful.
We can
make it happen. Let's go to Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah. They resurrect the cat, and the cat comes back rather wickedly evil. But I kind of think it's misunderstood. Because there's one point where the man is taking a bath, and he's like, oh, I'm going to relax. And the cat drops a gift for him, a dead rat, into his bathtub. I'm like,
this is so nice.
Yeah. And it's even
the cat
funner.
Wasn't trying to kill him or anything.
Yeah,
he wasn't trying to attack. He gave his gift.
Old man Munster tells them, he's like, oh, that's not your daughter's cat anymore. It's yours.
That's
and,
your
like,
fucking
that's exactly what's happening. The cat's like, hey, evil dude, it's like, here's a gift for you. Meow and stuff, I guess.
Thanks for bringing me back from the dead.
But then it's like, how did you get in here? Get out of here, you fucking cat.
Because undead kitties do not obey the laws of physics.
No, this cat, when it attacks like no cat I've ever seen, where it's like nobody totally threw this cat at him. But somebody likely did throw this cat at him when it attacks this man. It's just magical for the time. But yes, and accidents befall the family for the most wonderful scene I've seen in a movie in a long time, where they go out for a picnic and little Gage, the boy, is like, I'm a fly a kite now. And like, okay. And they all laugh because Gage drops the thing of string for the kite. And the father just turns around, ignoring his son by the roadside to watch his family for like 20 seconds with this, I love my family look.
Life is so good.
Last time he ran 50 feet away from me.
And then suddenly, oh my God, my son is dead.
But he get his head knocked in by the bumper.
Only until he digs him up. Oh, that truck, I'm surprised there was even a body left as fast as that truck went hit that kid.
And he hit the grill. Like, he didn't, like, it's not like he got bumped. Like, he got sucked in by the, like, you know, or anything. He got hit. He fucking hit the grill, man.
Yeah, they would have been washing him out with a power washer out of the engine. I mean, there's nothing that would have been left. Gage would have been put in, like, a mason jar and buried in the ground.
It wouldn't have been enough to fry an egg with.
Here's your boy.
I dug some of your boy out behind my ear when I got home. I hope it helps.
Unfortunately, the remains are Estonia.
Well, Lois, we can rebuild him. We have the technology.
Looks like a bit of his penis went inside your glass there, ma'am. Let me get that for you. But, the dad decides, I'm gonna bring my boy back because I miss my boy. And even though an evil cat came out, I'm sure a boy will be just fine. Lols. Mm-hmm. So obviously the boy comes back twisted and evil. And horror ensues. People die, including his waifu. And he decides again, maybe the third time's a charm. And he puts his wife in the cemetery, and she comes back like, you dumb white man, and kills him. And that's Pet Cemetery.
This understand. He waited too long with the cat and with Gage. You got to get him while they're fresh, he decides.
I like it. You also missed the part where his wife, Denise Crosby, comes back. And she's like literally oozing out of her eye, and he makes out with her. He's like, oh, I gotta give you some of that.
The eye juice has gone down her cheek and on her mouth. He's like, oh, it's just eyeball juice, the tastiest thing in the world. He literally only crows like,
nom nom, give me some.
It's like this.
I have the weirdest erection right now.
I don't know if I'm scared or turned on.
That was a reshoot, too, demanded by the studio. They wanted it gorier. It originally, it had, like, this sad, ominous ending, which might have been even good, who knows. But they're like, no, we need it like that German movie Necromantic, where he gets a boner for a corpse with its eye gushing.
Okay, well, at first, like, I'm thinking, okay, you know, Fred Gwynn is trying to save him from having to break his daughter's heart because she's not ready to deal with death and lose her kitty cat.
The wrong lesson.
But then, I know. And then he's like, well, I know Fred Gwynn told me about this guy who buried his son there. And his son came back a zombie and all fucked up, and they set him on fire and set his whole house on fire and killed the dad in the process.
And everybody died,
But I'm going to be different. And I can understand that because, you know, like, at that point, it's just grief. It's just sheer grief. Yeah. And, like, you know, luckily we'll never know the pain of, you know, a parent losing a child. But I can understand that sheer grief overcoming any logic. But then after that, and after having to literally put his son down because he's come back a murderous demon like the cat, then his next thought is, I'm going to put my wife in there. Like, then I was just like, no, you're just a stone cold fucking dum-dum.
Well, and he didn't just get warned by Fred Gwynn either, because he also had the ghost warning him beforehand multiple times. Like, Lewis, are you dumb?
Cat's cow.
You fucking dumb? I'm from beyond the grave, motherfucker. I tried to save you. It's like, you're not even listening to me right now. This is embarrassing.
Okay, yeah, listeners, if you're never going to watch it, he's the doctor of a college now. And this kid comes in, and he says later that he was pretty much dead when he came in. He tries to save him, and I don't think they even explained what happened to him, did they?
No, they do. The first thing they say was he was hit by a truck.
Oh,
yeah. When they have the awkward afterthought slow motion on his head being all ripped open.
They think he was running track with the school or something and got hit, but
don't go to Maine. So, get killed by a semi truck.
He tries to save this kid, but he can't. And the kid comes to him in a dream that night. Actually, no. Actually, right after he dies,
there's not even a scene in between. It's right away.
Yeah, he gets up and he says something like, the soil is rotten.
Oh, it's sour.
Yeah, that's
don't
it.
Taste it. It's gross.
It's totally gross.
Yeah.
It's expired. So, yeah, he says that. And then, furthermore, he appears to him in a dream that night and, like, takes him to the, Mi'kmaq cemetery, and says, basically says, don't do it, dude. Like, you see this? Don't do it.
That thing over there, it's evil. We're not going to show it, but there's a Wendigo. Yeah, don't go there.
Yeah, exactly. And then Lewis is like, ah, this is scary. Oh no, I just want to wake up. And then he wakes up with fucking dirt caking his bare feet and in the bed. And he's like, huh, that's weird. I'm just going to wash the sheets now.
Yeah, like, oh, I guess wife must have taken a shit at the foot of the bed again.
I had a mud accident.
Amber Heard.
No, that's the thing. He's an asshole. He doesn't even wash the sheets himself. He chucks them down the laundry chute for the lady they have come in to wash. And she'll get a plate of, like, stomach shots. I'm a crusty downeaster. Mud in the bed. That's weird.
Yeah, my stomach hurts. It'll pass. I should have made a doctor, but I couldn't find one. That's why I'm still single.
It's
ain't
the
cancer. Don't need exercise. You're just going to die.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, that character had no fucking point in... I'm sure she did in the book, but fucking point
she
in this
also...
movie.
She might have had a point in the original edit of the film, too, because Paramount's like, this movie's long. We want it really short.
Yeah,
they should have just cut her out completely.
Yeah, the movie does feel like it's mentioned. They were going to mention the movie, The Wendigo, but they felt that there was already too much going on and didn't want to confuse people. But it's like there are points where you can tell there's something out there, because Fred Gwynne brings him out to the forest with the cat, he trips because something spooks him, and you hear like a screech out in the distance, and he's like, oh, that's just a loon. And it's like, no, it's like, there's a reason he looked like he didn't believe what the fuck he was saying when he said that, because it was supposed to be the Wendigo, which I give credit for the remake doing, is they actually brought up the Wendigo, and it does play a pretty big part in the book, because it does pop up a few times, but... There's a lot that they didn't really put in that they should have in the movie, because they didn't really explain it too much with the cat, because they just wanted that to be kind of, oh, the cat came back and it's evil. But with Gage, there's in their house, the sister has a portrait that was painted that had like her and also one of her sister that haunts her dreams. If you pay attention, the outfit that Gage is wearing when he comes back is exactly what the sister was wearing in that picture. Because the whole idea was supposed to be that the sister came back through Gage, and that's why he killed the mom.
They ended up having it like a weird painting in her parents' house.
Yes. So
they keep showing it.
Yeah, it's like something that they originally were going to explain a little bit more about, but instead, like, no, we'll just fuck it. It's like, we need to make the mom's sister super scary, and that'll be enough for people to get that, and then fuck the rest of everything, especially the whole thing with, old man Munster, which really did fuck us up as kids, because that gave me a healthy fear to always have shit under my bed so no one can hide there and cut my Achilles tendon, because they show it, and holy fuck, is it really gnarly?
This is another one you guys saw as kids. I actually saw this when I was 20. It was actually at a family reunion in upstate New York. I was at my aunt's house with my brother and sister, I think one of our cousins. And our aunt's like, oh, you guys want to watch a movie? Let's put on Pet Cemetery. We're like, oh, well, we never saw that. And I got to the part about Tasha Yar there talking about her sister, and I'm like, what the fuck does this have to do with anything?
Is this spinal talking about your Romulan sister?
It's like, I'm doing something else. Fuck this. Yeah,
well, like,
we should mention that this is one of those few Stephen King movies where the script was by Stephen King.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
And also, funny, he did not actually want to release this book because he thought that this was really not so much shit as he just didn't like it, and he still kind of doesn't. Because he was really depressed when he wrote this, and to him it just comes off as, this is the most, there is no hope, there's no worth trying anything, because we all die in the end stories, and he doesn't like that kind of message.
You just have to accept the pain and
lesson.
It's like the only reason it got published was because his last publisher, his original one, he was leaving them for a new publishing house, and they said, hey, we need one more book from you. He's like, Fine, fuck you. Yeah, even his wife.
I did
wife
a line
like,
off this manuscript. Like, here, take it.
Even his wife is like, "Well, I mean, it's good. It's shit, but it's good." He's like, "All right, fuck it. Let's give it to him. Pay me and move on." And then people are like, "Oh my god, it's the most amazing, scary fucking story ever." It's like, "Oh, as intended."
And I remember from the. Like, it's been a while since I've seen the documentary, but...
Oh, yeah, there's a full-fledged movie documentary on this.
Yeah, it's really actually interesting. Yeah, it's a good watch, but I remember them saying that one of the headstones in there had their cat's name on it.
Yes.
That's why the dead speak.
There's actually...
Over there, the dead walk.
If you look in there, because the old man mentions it, there is a gravestone also for Cujo, because he mentions how a dog was buried there that when it came back killed like several people. And there's like a lot of Stephen King stuff, and I know he probably did it on purpose. There's a lot of stuff tied to his other stories in there. Like when the wife is driving back home, one of the signs saying what's in this direction and that direction is Jerusalem's Lot. I was like,
it's new.
Yeah, a lot of authors do that. They'll do self-referential things, since it's a lot easier just to have a universe.
Very few authors get to the point Stephen King did of, I'm going to put my actual self in the novel for no reason.
I was going to say.
Just like Ayn Rand.
I mean, like.
The Dark Tower series is a wondrous thing.
Sorry if we spoiled it.
You didn't spoil it because I were never going to read or watch.
I was just going to give the heads up. But the Dark Tower is like, it's a great read. And then you get up to the one that's like, okay, we're just going to focus on the younger years and Shemmy. And like, it's like, what? No, what? And then like, and then it just gets batshit crazy. And you're like, what, Harry Potter, Stephen King, what? What is happening?
Yeah, eventually it starts straying into Wheel of Time territory, and then he decided he didn't want this turning into the Dune series, so he did end it finally, but...
Yeah. Took a while,
Dead
but it's...
Yes.
Like, toward the end of it, I was listening to the audiobooks, and I was just like... Because, you know, I had that commute. So I listened to the older or the ones later in the series by audiobook, and I was just like, wait, what?
Yeah, that
like,
just happened.
Like, did I just do so many drugs that I didn't know I did so many drugs? What is happening? Like,
yeah.
It's possible.
But I'm glad Stephen King wrote this, because there is a lot. This is kind of what I love and hate between this and the remake, is the remake does have a lot more subtext story in it that was in the novel, and this one takes a lot of that out, but it does include a lot more fucked up things from the novel, which I really wish the remake had the balls to do, like showing the wonderful scene of the father losing it to his father-in-law and knocking over the casket and Gage's
that
body.
That was awesome.
What I do every time I go to a funeral is I start screaming really loud, knock over the casket, and
blame
somebody
for the death.
You have
no right! I actually thought you started fights by saying, if you look close enough, you can see her nipples.
Do you see that? They did a great job. Look at those things. Yeah. I mean, it's cold in here, but damn.
You can hardly notice the cum stains on her cheeks. It's
I'm sorry, is that your grandma?
Was that some people do wedding crashing. I do funeral crashing.
Your meemaw.
Your meemaw. I seesaw your meemaw.
Your dead grandma was my waifu.
I took her for one more ride.
There's a show, I think it's called I Think You Should Leave, and they had this like skit on about like where it's a show that just like a television show that just shows bodies falling out of caskets. And it's like America's Funniest Home Videos.
It's a compilation of nut punches to corpses.
And then they have special episodes that are naked corpses falling out. And the bottom falling out of coffins. It was really good. But it made me think of that. But this is, of course, the way that they end up having to do it is just another one of those I hate to be the PC police, but it is kind of like a fucking offensive that it's like, it's an Indian burial ground. So things are going to happen.
In Europe, if you reach for an ancient horror, you could be like, oh yeah, no, there was some ancient druids or some Celts or something or some Gauls. In America, if you want some really old horror, that's what you're going to go to.
And it's one of those also in fairness, it's nothing to do with just insensitivity. It's just literally people were not using the term Native American for Native Americans a lot back then.
I had somebody call down to the desk last night and use the I word.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Indigenous.
Yes, that indigenous, exactly. Yes.
Yes.
No, I think they were referring to my Korean boss, and they're like, yeah, she was an Indian or a Mexican or something. And I'm like, we don't have such a person working here. People are a treasure.
And that's why you enjoy them over again. Certain phone company, I used to get people on the phone that would say, I'd like to speak to a white person.
Wait,
they
said that in words?
Yeah.
I did call center work for 7 years, and I never had anybody put it on the nose like that.
I had a lot of those from Nextel, too, and we were always told, just be ready for that. It's like they didn't want us. They said you could fake accents, because if you do, you have to carry it through the whole conversation.
That's what we were told, too. Yeah.
But they also told us, shouldn't do accents, because you will have people that specifically will say, I want to talk to an American, or, yes, I want to talk to a white person.
Yeah.
And that's why they kept telling us how important our jobs are, because if we do our jobs horribly, then Nextel will take the jobs overseas, and people in Pakistan, India,
and
such
will be. That's what they did anyway.
Yeah, they were not very subtle about their intentions.
That's really cute. They just openly threaten you with that.
My favorite moment was when somebody called and she was just being a bitch because I was trying to collect money for her being late for a bill, you know? And that's like, dude, this is my job. Like, it's not like I want to. But she said something like, I want to speak to somebody who speaks English good. And then I said on the way, like, I transferred her and I said, okay, I'm going to get you on the line with someone who speaks English well. And then she was like, well, what? Like, eat a dick.
You know, every now and then your finger could just kind of slip, you know, like, oh, you know what? I hit the wrong key and I hung up on them. I don't know how that happened.
I may have done that where I purposely ignored someone and said, I'm sorry, I can't hear you, sir, so I'm going to terminate this call. And they're screaming, like, you can hear me, you bastard. Like, I have to terminate because I can't hear you anymore.
But I may have done that too.
The fucking worst I've ever had happen and my team laughed at me for was a woman saying she is going to put a curse on me, that she has gypsy blood in her family and they're putting a curse on me because I wouldn't take away their new phone activation fees. Like the company told them they would at the business they went and did so. Oh, yeah.
I'm a level 99 mage. You are so dead right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we could keep going, but
well, I guess we could.
I need to talk more about
dead children coming back to
life.
Yeah. But mostly children getting dead, that's the real payoff.
Yeah.
Getting smashed by 18-wheeler trucks, you know.
Yeah. When I reread the book, well, actually listened to the book, I did the audiobook again, before Linda, me, your husband, and
Joni
went and saw the remake. And yeah, the book really is pretty goddamn dire. It's just really, really more fucked up.
I haven't read it yet, but it's on my list. I think it's actually next to my bed.
It's really worth it, because the ending, I actually wish they kind of stuck with the ending from the book, because like most Stephen King stuff, it's left a little more ominous as to what happens. Like they get to the house and they're like, oh my god, this old man is here and he's dead. And
can you just signal to me when you're finished with the ending, because I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll give you the subtle signal. You'll know.
And we'll be at the end of the episode.
Well, it's Stephen King, so it's like Return of the King, right? There's like 9 epilogues, you know.
It's like what happens is they have the whole massacre at the house, and a policeman is talking about how he sees a figure leaving the house with a shape, an odd oblong shape wrapped in a white sheet, headed off mumbling into the woods about how maybe it'll be different, maybe things will go a certain way, and accepting his fate, and he just wanders off carrying the body. But the policeman's like, oh, I don't know what this thing is. It could be a body, could not be. I'm kind of a country bumpkin. And yeah.
Just looking to get reelected. I don't care.
Yeah. And now that Linda's not here, let's talk about her outrageous monkey costume. Like, we're not supposed to notice a grown-ass 40-year-old woman is dressed in a monkey outfit.
This wasn't Casual Friday. This
was not. She did not earn a gold star today to start wearing Casual Friday attire. I mean, come on. This is a video store.
I mean, you know, I wear the same thing every day. I don't know.
Yeah, we only have our masks off, in fact, because, you know, there's no customers, and we got together for this. So, yeah.
She's doing that look thing.
Oh, no, she can... we'll just keep talking. How's your day going?
I'm doing okay. The knee ain't swollen up quite so big, you know? You can tell the storm's brewing when the knee's swollen up.
That's right. How did you like the movie?
I've never been a super big fan of this one or the sequel. Probably because, so, you know, you got your gore. That's there, you know, and that's cool and all. And you got your doom. Doom's good. Doom's a good thing. It's really depressing. Main character is rock stupid. But it's a horror movie, so I can accept that. But I feel between like the longer edit and like between another version of the book, maybe.
Donnie, have you heard the word?
You're not coming back yet. I wasn't gonna sing.
She was gone.
You shouldn't have buried me.
Oh God.
But yeah,
dead Linda's better.
The path from your bladder is stony.
when you do your supernatural horror movies, though, you either need like a lot of explanation or like no explanation. You know what I'm saying? For your scary, you either need it like in granulated detail, like get your fantasy verse like all fleshed out, or you need to have everybody going like, the fuck is happening right now?
Yeah.
Even
then, it's like, I really believe that you need to have a set of established rules, and you need to follow those.
Yeah.
Because if not, then the horror, it's even if it's supernatural horror, it's like, it just ruins the story. Because if horror starts going off whatever it wants, then it's going to ruin the story. Because like, well, how can it do this now when before it couldn't do this? And it's like, because I'm spoopy.
Otherwise you're just sort of showing off special effects, you know. That can work if you're enacting like a specific fun tone, maybe. But other than that, like if you're looking more to frighten people, it's like you gotta sort of decide what the boundaries are.
Yeah.
Like the bit where Lewis there is going to revive Gage, and he's crawling past the quarry, and he looks down at the pile of rocks, and it like turns into a guy's face with a powdered wig, and I'm like,
yeah.
What the shit was that?
Yeah, that was actually I think that's what I said too. Like, the fuck? Like, wait, you could have done without that. But then, to be fair, like, okay, this is going to be an asshole thing to say, but here I go. Mary Lambert, the director, had only done music videos up till this point.
Which is fine. I mean, that's, we got a lot of good directors that way. We got David Fincher that way. Although, unfortunately, after this, she went and did the sequel.
Yeah, but also, what was it? Kubrick also did a lot of commercial work, too, before he got into film.
Yeah.
But that's also why it attributed to his style later on as well, of having duplicates, certain way things were shot so that it kind of drew you in. But
and he also did the advertising for his own films, which is cool.
But, no, we are talking about the film itself. What were your thoughts on it, Linda? Did you enjoy it? Did you hate it? Why?
I enjoyed it. I mean, of course, there were some things that I would change, I could see a bunch of parts where, like, it's probably better in the book. Like the whole, what's her character's name, Missy, like, killing herself. It's just, like, in the movie.
I somehow keep missing that part of the movie, yeah.
Yeah, in the movie, it's like, oh, okay, so she killed herself, all right. I guess
not necessarily surprising in a Stephen King universe. I mean, he's like, oh, no, what else fucked up could I throw in here?
But I mean, other than the kids learning about death through her killing herself, I guess it's like, it's just pointless as it is for the movie. Like,
it is. Yeah.
It serves no purpose.
Yeah. Because again, in the book, there's a huge debate about that, which again, I give credit to the remake for. Where the dad is more about, I want to be realistic about it. This is what happens when you're dead. It's very cold and calculated, but it's real versus fantasy. And the wife did not want to address death at all, not just because of her sister, but her own idea of faith interpretation of death, going to heaven, and how as a kid you should hold on to your innocence a lot longer. Whereas the dad's like, no, the sooner we bring him to reality, the better, because he didn't want to be caught in a lie. Because in his childhood, all he had were people sweet-talking him into things. And then when he learned the truth about things, he felt like, why did you lie to me? This is kind of bullshit.
Well,
but he also,
that's a great topic, though. I mean,
They do kind of bring it up in the film, too, where he gets mad at his wife, where he's like, hey, if something happens when he's getting his nuts chopped off and he dies, it could happen. This is now on you, because I had to promise our daughter that he was going to be okay.
Because you made me promise,
Yeah.
And I appreciated that
promise.
Part, too.
Yeah, and I'm like, shut the fuck up, Tasha Yar.
Yeah, it's like, you promised you were going to be Chief Security Officer Tasha Yar on the fucking USS Enterprise, and you decided to leave. And then when it became successful, you're like, bring me back.
I want to bang Data. That's what happened.
And then winding up in a David A. Pryor movie. Great job.
Yeah, that was the height of her career. She was going places.
Speaking of which, did you guys know that this movie features one Sarah Trigger?
What? Sarah Trigger's in this?
She is.
In the background, out of focus, where she belongs?
She must be.
Awful.
Oh, no, I'm a liar. I'm a liar. She's in the sequel.
That makes a lot more sense. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. No, I've seen.
Stephen King, however, is in this one.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Stephen King, we should all point out, by the way, did not let them put his name on the sequel.
Yeah. But even weirdly enough, he actually says he enjoyed the sequel. He liked the script and he said he was okay with it.
Yeah.
The remake he was kind of about, but he understood why they changed what they did. It made sense.
And Mary
a lot
Lambert,
of critics like the sequel better.
Mary Lambert directed the sequel too.
Yeah. She's the common thread there. And Mary Lambert also wanted the little girl who has the visions of Pax Cow to be back in the sequel as the main character. And for some reason, Paramount Pictures was all like, what? A horror movie with a teenage girl as the main character? It'll never work.
Like that Edward Furlong fellow, he's really hot right now.
He's going places.
Well, he was hot right now, but Paramount Pictures had just produced the entire Friday the 13th series.
Yeah.
Who tend to be the main characters in slasher movies? It's a fucking teenage girl, you fucking morons.
Fat young men.
Was also the early 90s when the horror genre was essentially dead.
A very hard time because you had that really generic music soundtrack through a lot of them, and the MPAA was a lot more just cut your dick off about anything in horror.
Bush era, yeah, no, and like it was, and everything was about special effects, and nothing was serious. It was all cute.
Yeah,
and I feel like that is the one lone reason where they had to have that weird face appear. Because they're like, special effects, right?
Yeah, but again, it's like, that's why it made it weird, because their choice is what to omit, what to keep, with the whole keeping that character in with his half-torn face as like a prophet that never gets explained why he is and who it is working through him, like why the whole family should know this guy and why it's important that he's giving them this information, and that nobody listens to him through the whole thing.
And it's like, hey, Tasha Yar, why don't you come in at the last minute? Oh, it's all going to go really badly. I probably shouldn't have helped you by.
Yeah. Well, like Adrian had said, and I agreed, it's the characters in this were very unnaturally stupid for all the wrong reasons. Like, there is not a good thought between any of these people.
I mean, it's not like they're not without their motivations, but they're really dumb.
Yeah.
Except for maybe the kids. little girl's probably the smartest.
I like the little girl, though. I was like, Mommy, no! It was Pascal! He's a good ghost! Why don't anybody listen to me? You're all gonna fucking die!
Pascal! I'm just a Mr. Gay!
Yeah, normally I hate children in movies too. Like children and child actors.
Yeah.
This kid actually did a good job at playing a kid. She didn't try to be like a little adult. Like it was,
I hate to say it, but like some kids just come like, okay, most kids in movies, and I think it comes a lot from Donnie and I never watching age appropriate shows and movies, feel like a lot of kids in movies just annoy the shit out of me because they're the cute little kid and like, I'm gonna speak like this because I'm a kid type of thing. And you know, just
I'm gonna play with you, Daddy. I wanna cut you up with this rubber scalpel. And
okay, now that was adorable, though.
Oopsie.
And that's also probably the main reason, besides my age, that I don't have children. They're gonna try to kill me eventually. But yeah, she was good. I really liked her, and she seemed to be the smartest of them all, because she's like, Daddy, make sure that to put church in the basement so he doesn't get run over.
Kiss my cat for me. You kiss your own cat, sweetie.
Yeah, let God kiss his own cat.
It's not God's cat, it's my cat. God's cat.
He can get his own cat.
But apparently it's something Stephen King's daughter told him when they talked about that. That was why he got half inspired for this, but he also said where he grew up, there was an actual pet cemetery near his home.
I believe it. Yeah, he imports a lot of his back in the day childhood and imprints it on modern day, and it's always so out of step.
That's why I still love this day, The Shining, because he admits that that was coming from real life, where he absolutely wanted to kill his entire family while he was on alcohol, because they just wouldn't leave him the fuck alone to write. So then he decided to, while vacationing in a hotel, that he's like, hey, I think I should start writing these murderous thoughts down.
I mean, we've all been there, right?
Yeah. But before we talk with Amy or go any further, I wanted to bring up something from our childhood, which I really still remember fondly, is my bitching and complaining because I really wanted us to go see The Fly Part 2. But instead, we went and saw Bambi when it was re-released. And
wow,
as we're waiting to go to the theater, I see a line of people for The Fly 2. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I want to be there. And then I saw a cardboard cutout for Hellbound, Hellraiser 2. And like, motherfuckers! I was like, the best movie ever is going to be a sequel. We got to seize this Bambi shit.
Man, Hellraiser 2 is awesome.
We got a coin, didn't we? Like a special collector's coin.
We got a coin.
My parents would do that too. They'd take us to all the Disney reissues of all their shit. So yeah, we got to see like Snow White and like 101 Dalmatians in the theater.
But I was thinking, okay, I wrote down one of the lines and like, okay, I was really tired. I just woken up and, Fred Gwynne's character says, "It's your cat now, Lewis." And for some reason, I wrote it down. It's because I was thinking like, oh, can we use that in the show?
Now, dog.
And so I have no idea why, but I wrote it down. It's your cat now, Elliot. Like, who the fuck is Elliot?
Right here. What the
shit is that?
Elliot.
But there was also the line where he says, that Lewis says his dad used to say, "God sees the truth but waits." I wrote that down because I was trying to figure out what that means. Like, do you guys have any idea? Like, I'm being serious here. Like, with the
no, this is why there's no karma or justice. God's all like, "I'll get it later."
Okay. Yeah. And I think this was like right after. Yeah, this was right after Missy killed herself.
Yeah.
And they were talking about like, well, you know, why did she do it and something like that. And he's like, well, God knows that, or, was it God sees the truth, but waits, like, wait.
Well, and I kind of hate what they did with, Gwen's character because I really thought they might have done better in the remake, but they really fuck him over still because in the book, his wife is alive. And it's like, that's part of what bonds him with the doctor and the family is that the doctor helps save her life because she ends up having a stroke. And it kind of plays into how things go later, but it also gives reason why the wife and husband were both friends with the family. And it gives a little more insight into stuff going around town and stuff that just happens in general.
Did a shelf collapse.
The Wendigo's come for Tawny. Yeah.
Just don't stop.
Oh.
I gave it 350 and it came back. That was on me. That was entirely on me.
But also, I noticed that he's the most ineffective leaf raker. Like, his family is gone to...
Oh, you're not liking his stewardship? Is that what you're saying?
The family's gone to his in-laws for Thanksgiving, and he's just like, shh.
Like, yeah, gotta keep this. They're still gonna die.
Like, you know,
what was the point?
His landscaping may be boring, but if you ever want to bring a dead cat back, he's your guy.
I guess so.
Like, oh, I guess I should have told you what would happen.
Found your cat frozen to the ground.
Okay, yeah. So Fred Gwynne's character, what the fuck? Like, I know that. That I had to basically kill my dog because it came back like a Cujo dog, and then that boy's son came back like a zombo that's all wanted to kill people. But hey, let's put your cat in there. Like, what's the worst that can happen?
Well, you know, he was just being neighborly, but in fact, he didn't really like them.
And then he's like, you know what, my idea of a good time? Let's go up that path there, and I'm gonna show you all about death.
I'm gonna stomp rats on my front yard and then bury them in the Native American burial ground.
You know, this is actually based on real events in Stephen King's youth, except they'd pull their Ford Ranchero up to the edge of the quarry and shoot beer bottles into it.
Yeah, they're going sort of the same on thing. The Native American burial ground.
Yeah. It's like, do you know like the Iroquois were around here at one point or something? Ah, fuck it. Yeah. Old Milwaukee.
There's parts, like, the stony parts where, like, they've got boulders, like, up to his chest. And I'm thinking, we're supposed to believe that Fred Gwynne, like, pulled himself up over those, like,
with help.
But, also.
Stage hand of man's heart, Estonia. Yeah.
Before we go into, the details, I do want to say that today is Thanksgiving Day. Cats. But only for cats. I want to tell my cats that. So good timing on the on this choice, Johnny.
And meowity. And so, speaking of.
Oh. Amy?
Amy.
Amy, what happened?
Amy, what happened?
What did you do?
What did you do, Amy?
Amy, this is serious.
This is serious.
Did you carry that money up there?
Where
the
is it, Amy? Where is my money?
Where's my money, Amy?
Well, this happened April 21st, 1989, and budget was $11.5 million. Gross was $57.5 million, so it was totally in the black. This here opened at number one. Number two that week was Major League, knocked out of its number one spot by Pet Sematary, followed by Say Anything, followed by The Dream Team with the Michael Keaton.
Oh.
Followed by Rain Man. Followed by She's Out of Control. Followed by Dolph Lundgren in Red Scorpion. Yeah. Which opened at number seven. It was its opening week. It's actually a pretty good movie. It's just, you know, I guess not for all tastes. Then See You in the Morning, which I didn't see at any time. Then Disorganized Crime.
Oh, yeah.
And number 10 was Speed Zone. And Speed Zone, for those who don't know, is the third movie in the Cannonball Run series, which has neither Burt Reynolds nor Hal Needham involved. It stars John Candy and Eugene Levy.
Oh, no.
And it is the worst movie they were ever in together. It is garbage. It is just shit. If you want to read something funny and tragic, read Roger Ebert foaming at the mouth about how bad the movie is. And he's not wrong about it being bad, but what the things that set him off are unique to him. And it's like, oh, Roger Ebert, you're so stupid.
That's really unfortunate. Wasn't this the same year that Ghostbusters 2 came out?
I believe so. 1989 was a loaded year. That was when we got the Tim Burton Batman. Which for those
when
who
he was still
who,
good.
Believe otherwise, Tim Burton Batman is the best Batman, so shut the fuck up if you believe otherwise. Yeah.
And that's the only time you're ever going to hear Atrian say the Tim Burton here is the best.
Well, Tim Burton was really great for the first 10 years of his career. We admired him. We all looked up to him. We were proud to have him around. And then he made Mars Attacks, and it never recovered. It just got worse.
I don't know. I was okay with Mars Attacks, but I remember being in the drive-in and seeing Planet of the Apes, and I was excited because I love Paul Giamatti, and I knew he was in there. And I just remember going,
They're going to be remaking
this Planet of the Apes again.
wait, they're going to reboot it a fourth time?
Why? Yeah.
It's part of last one was fine. The copyright on the property, most
for
likely.
For fuck's sake, just let it die.
They want to go back to the social issues and such that were in the original.
It was a 1968 movie with Charlton Heston. It shouldn't be thought of as anything else. Ignore the sequels.
I like the reboot.
Well, spoilers, because this is the premise thus far from the early scripts. Is that Taylor actually dies in the first part of the film, and the rest of it becomes about the woman that he would have married in the first film. So it's now a female.
Oh, of course, you got to have a female protagonist. You can't not.
Yes, and also she has a. There's no more Dr. Zaius.
She has one boob.
I'm forgetting her name. I love the Planet of the Apes movie.
Got a little Dr. Zaius.
Dira, she's now like. In a head ape position, and she's going to be like the antagonist to the protagonist. And
every movie's going to be Wonder Woman now.
Yeah, and I kind of hate this with a lot of.
Hello.
I really hate this with a lot of female-led movies. Is I don't like that they have to have a female villain for the female lead actress.
Yeah.
It's like they just they're
yeah. That's like how Lifetime lost the plot at one point. So. Lifetime used to be about a woman beating a man, getting one over on a man, because like the men were in a position of power. And it's like, look, this in this one the woman wins. And after a while, it's like, no, all women are awful. Look, look, here's another woman, but they're both kind of shitty.
I wasn't crazy about it, but Wonder Woman 1984 at least. I mean, they did have like the female antagonist, but she was going up like. The big baddie was a dude, so.
Yeah. He was more a concept than a dude.
I wish, well, these things, the villain's always just a concept. I mean.
No.
Loki got his own show! My life's complete now! Oh my god, you guys!
I mean, don't get me wrong, this is what a feminist looks like, but I don't like that chick crap. I just don't like with the I mean, there's some of it like I'll eat it up with a fucking spoon, like the Invisible Man and shit like that, but like I just sometimes like, and I hate to say this too, but with like Harvey Birdman with Bird Girl, the spinoff, you could just tell that nobody had like a really great idea. It was just like a fucking focus group.
Well, yeah, none of these things saying, come from like, people who this matters to. This is all completely crass, like money oriented decision making.
Yeah, it's saying like, you know what really sells right now? Female protagonist.
Well, that's like, what I'm saying. That's why when we had a discussion on an episode that never aired because of reasons that I enjoy feminist movies. The thing is, though, I prefer a well-written character versus just a story that says this woman is amazing and awesome at everything. You just have to accept that for no reason other than that.
Yeah.
And she never, ever is anything else but amazing. It's like...
But it has to be a character, beings. A character that is shown and not just told.
They can learn. They can grow. That's what makes you like the character, cheer for the character, the hero's journey. Things like that make for a better movie and story and experience. But when you're pandering to women, they're smart enough to know that. And that's why I kind of don't like how this generation is, because it's all about, as long as it's somewhat entertaining and makes you giggle, then that's enough reason to support it, because you have to support it because you're a woman and it's important to you because you're being told this. But also these things are being written by focus groups and groups of people versus competent writers. And it just feels like they want to focus more on, look at what's
also the woman credited for the screenplay might just be the one that the Writers Guild decided should get credit, by the way. Sometimes screenplays are written by in excess of 10 people.
Well, I hate it, because also going on this, before we end this rant, what really makes me mad, and Marvel is partially responsible for a lot of this, is how we have to treat everything as this is the first time anything like this has happened. Or it's like Wonder Woman has to be appreciated because it was written by a woman. It was directed by a woman. It's like Penny Marshall existed.
Ida Lupino, Lillian Hellman.
Like
there's women have been doing shit forever. You're just like only now paying attention to it. You were ignoring them before. It's your fault. Fuck you.
Kathleen Kennedy. About selling and marketing their product and getting you to say you have to see this because that makes a statement by going and seeing this. Like no. Be good. Be interesting. Then I'll give you my money.
Yeah.
Well, like, there was one point in the end of the was it fuck. And well, no, the Marvel series that. With the what do you call it? Endgame. The second part of Endgame where like and spoiler if you haven't seen that, but I remember seeing it in the theater and like all the female characters came in and started kicking ass and I'm like, don't give me this shit. Like I know you're trying to play to me.
They're doing the hero pose in a group together.
And it's like also, the Wachowskis, when in the third Matrix movie, all of a sudden there's these badass lesbians who appear literally out of nowhere. Like, I don't think they were in the second one. I don't think they were in the first one. It's like, who the fuck is this? Why do I care? What just happened? Like, yo, like, you have to set up shit, you idiot.
I love a great female lead, like, with Mad Max Fury Road. That was great. But like, Donnie was saying, you have to, like, audiences can be smarter than that. So don't treat me like I'm gonna be like, oh, boobies on the screen saving the day. This is for me. You know, like, no, fuck you. Like, you gotta work harder than that.
You don't see me going out and paying to see everything that says it's for gay people, you know, like, yeah.
Everybody's doing it.
Now, to get back to the movie, and I've got a hot take, and I know that
Pet Cemetery.
Before you do, I just want to say something, because I know our father would appreciate us doing it if he were still with us. But on the topic of Jeffrey, I remember Linda rented it so we could all watch it, and our father left the moment they said, oh, it broke. They were having gay sex with toys in the beginning of the film. He's like, all right, I'm done. I'm out.
And I was like, what?
It's good, Dad. You got to watch it. I'm out. I'm out.
Good. It is a great movie.
Jeffrey, one of the few good gay movies.
Yes, but he did come back for it.
There aren't any.
Oh, I was like, look, it's got the guy from Wings. What do you know?
What? I haven't seen Wings.
So what is your hot take?
Yeah, let's
hear
the hot take.
Know that it's a little controversial, and I know you guys don't want to get into politics, but hear me out. When I die, I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery.
Well, neither did the Ramones.
I don't want to come back from the dead.
They fired Dee Dee Ramone right after that, and he had to go do that Funky Man song. They did. Yeah. He liked heroin a lot, but still.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Fuck you guys.
Speaking of which,
did at least also do a remix of that song too, because why not?
Yeah, I remember being happy that it was just in there at all, but unhappy that they didn't have the original. And I remember Joni and I like, I don't wanna be buried, like, just happy. But there are a couple connections to Nicolas Cage in this. I just want to point out, and the series.
That matter to us.
That actually is something even funnier too.
I don't know.
Nicolas Cage, but does connect to the film and actors. For the lead role, they actually, as their first choice, had Bruce Campbell.
Bruce fucking Campbell.
Oh, shit.
Play the lead. Yeah, they really wanted him for this, but for some reason,
should have done it.
They decided to go different. And
they decided to go with Midkiff, star of Time Cracks.
Yeah.
Time Cracks. Remember Time Cracks for a whole season?
Choices made indeed. You may know him from Route 666
with Don the Dragon Wilson. No, wait, no, that's not what I'm thinking of.
He was in like a bunch of shows
on
a
TV. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of TV and CSI, but who hasn't been in CSI?
He was also in Nightmare Weekend, which is one of the worst 80s horror movies I have ever seen. It's really down there. If you've never seen Nightmare Weekend, it was a British, Canadian, French co-production. And I think it wanted to be softcore, but then again, I don't know if it knew at all what it wanted to be. Don't ever watch it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that we were in episodes of CSI, but where you would really know him from, without a doubt, is from his work in Air Bud 3.
Oh, yeah, Air Bud 3, the rescue,
the buttoning.
The next day,
Air Bud returns from the grave. But anywho,
Donnie.
Yes, I have something interesting to share with all of you.
What would that be?
That's twice I've unintentionally cut you off.
Oh, I don't think you cut me off.
Oh, well, a little
bit. I just said, what would that be?
I know, that's when we played.
That's when we played, Daddy. I played with Mommy. With
we play hide and seek.
I have one dissertation I will save for the end, and this one was specifically for one of our crew members currently with us.
Hmm?
But Stephen King produced works at the reading level of Dick and Jane books. Only the simplest of simpletons would find his material good.
Shots fired.
What do you get when you take his crappy novels and turn them into movies? You wind up with a good laugh. This movie, essentially nothing more than a makeup on a pig, did a great job of showing just how horrible King's books really are. Jeez. Watch it for the laughs, but that's basically all it offers.
That kid slices Achilles' heel right up. That kid done died.
I'm sure they filled their bubble pipe while they were contemplating writing that sentence.
Yeah, and what about that Aries K with a scratch on the side?
Yeah.
I actually really enjoyed those parts with the ghost traveler.
The rental car scene, by the way, Linda, ties in with your movie. Because you remember the line, like I have a rough life, I'm a Chrysler dealer?
Yeah.
The Aries K is one of the cars that Chrysler put out to try to get out of trouble. Yes. Because in the 70s, they're all like, make new cars, make catalytic converters? We're not going to do that. And they went fucking bankrupt. And they're like, Jimmy Carter, come save us. It's like, no, your management are idiots. They're stupid. I hate them. They're stupid. And they're like, fuck, we need that Lee Iacocca guy. And then after that, the Aries K came out.
I'm a Chrysler dealer. Yeah. I want to know all things.
Sorry. History lesson.
It's goofy, forced, predictable. I feel absolutely no attachment and sympathy for the characters. The parents can easily win the worst ones ever. They did not learn anything from the first time the kid almost got killed. I rolled my eyes multiple times. There were a few okay moments, but other than that, it's not good. Not sure why it's highly rated. My mistake for putting faith in it. And now we come to our dissertation. And oh boy.
Oh, jeez. Well, these are always great. They don't see what could go wrong.
A family with a dad, Lois. Lewis. Dale Mitkin. Mom, Rachel, Denise Crosby, 10-year-old Aileen, Blaze Birdall, and about 3-year-old Gage, Miko Hughes, moved to this beautiful house in Maine, seemingly unaware of the semis that roar down the highway in front of their house every 90 seconds or so. The neighbor across the way, the wonderful Fred Gwynn, makes them feel at home.
It's wonderful.
And shows them a pet cemetery where children bury their pets. But a little further on is a sacred ground which can bring the dead back to life. But the dead come back in a nasty mood.
A nasty mood. They're grumpy.
Oh.
The grumpy dead.
Definite spoilers. The novel by Stephen King was good. It was long, but it developed characters and situations that made you care what happened.
Wait, are you giving book spoilers?
No.
Okay.
No. Keep your ears on.
Yeah. Okay. This movie jettisons all the character development and just plays up the gore and violence. Animals are killed on camera. I know it's fake, but it's still repulsive.
They're killed on camera, you guys. They killed real animals for this movie.
A little boy is hit by a semi, and his casket pops open during the funeral.
Yeah.
In a totally sick scene.
That was
sick, bro.
It was sick awesome.
He's brought back to life and attacks and kills people, including his mom. I do wonder how a 3-year-old was able to hang her. A ghostly jogger, don't ask, tries to help the family for no reason. The movie just works the audience over, shoving every gruesome death or violence into your face. It just goes out of its way to shock you. End spoilers.
They didn't show her death, though. Like, I wish that they did.
Yeah, but again, like Adrian addressed, this is when they started kind of changing these things. You didn't show a lot of the nasty stuff, but
you show like her oozing eye, but like her corpse, reanimated corpse's oozing eye, but you can't show her dying.
Yeah,
you do get her screaming no.
Yeah,
why does everyone always scream no? How come it's never maybe?
Maybe.
Acting is no help. Midkiff is just dreadful as the father. Hmm. He's handsome and buff, but totally blank. Crosby.
That's all I'm looking for. My.
Crosby isn't much better. The two kids are just annoying. Only Gwen single-handedly saves this picture with his effortless good acting.
Wow. Fuck the kids.
This picture shows a total contempt for the audience, taking large leaps in logic and having characters do incredibly stupid things, especially Midkiff at the end. This movie was, inexplicably, a huge box office hit in 1989, which led to the even worse sequel in 1992. I saw it in a theater back then. And was disturbed how the audience kept cheering on the violence. And was just...
Oh, no, violence!
And I was just appalled by what I saw. A sick, repulsive horror film. A1 all the way. When you think it's all over and can't get worse, the Ramones sing a title song. I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery. Truly beyond belief.
That's beyond belief, y'all.
They did not sign a signature, unfortunately.
They didn't even name the address of their friend who made them watch it.
I know. I really wish we had more of those, or even word from Fartknocker, because they
yes. know what's
going on.
I actually looked up Fartknocker and found some of his reviews. Oh, God. And I was watching one movie that I was just like,
the Fartknocker likes the color.
I watched one movie on Shudder that I was just like, this is such like a self-indulgent piece of shit. And because the guy who created it, directed it, and starred in it, and it was like, and everyone's like, oh, this is such a great movie. And like, I loved it so much in the 90s. And I'm just like, the fuck, man. No, and I was just like, doesn't anybody else see what I see? And then there, like the light of God was Fartknocker.
Fartknocker was there dropping the truth. But no, have you ever been on YouTube and looked at the comment section for shit people made themselves, like movies that they made themselves? Like a lot, there's so much fucking terrible. Okay, YouTube is a wonderful platform and it's a terrible platform because you can get your shit on there, but then everybody else can too. And so you look at this fuck awful movie with this acting and these themes. There's a guy who makes fucking Christian Joker movies on there for fuck's sake.
What?
And the comment section is always glowing praise. They're like, holy shit, look, somebody actually tried to do a thing. I never thought of doing that. It's like, yeah, he tried. Fucking failed though.
I think it's I said in my review that The Room did it better. Tell me what's so
different. Oftentimes it's true.
I mean, yeah, did. But anywho, what do you feel? Because I know that our theme this month is learning the wrong lessons. What makes you think of that when it comes to this movie, Don?
Well, I would say the idea of bringing your child back when even the man who helped you bring back your daughter's dead cat is screaming at you, don't do this. I know you're thinking of doing this. Don't do it.
A guy and comes back from the dead to tell you.
No, I'm going to say yes. It's just you're making a bad choice, dog. And even so, after fighting and murdering your son, you decide, oh, I got to bring my wife back. I love her so much. And it's just you didn't learn the right lesson. You learned the wrong lesson.
It's pretty rare for a character, even in a horror film, to get warnings this often and this explicit and still just go for it.
Yeah, it's rare for someone to go from one level of stupidity and then just escalates to a whole new level of stupidity where even the Native Americans and the Wendigo would have been just shaking their head like, dude.
Oh, God, like, all this guy right here.
Can you believe this guy?
He's coming back.
Fucking A.
Hey, you know what? I told you.
It's okay, because in the end, the truck drivers are redeemed. They drop off Denise Crosby, and she's not even a little drugged or anything.
Well, and, you know, I guess, like, because Fred Gwynn's character stays up on the porch and eventually falls asleep because he's waiting for him to come home. So he could be like, I ought not to do that. But I'm thinking, like, you know where his son is buried. Just go. Just go and stop him. It's obviously taking him hours to dig a hole. Like, come on, man. But well, no, yeah, he waits around.
Reason, I won't say what happens, but that's even more reason you'll enjoy the book. Because I actually go into the story of the guy that was brought back from the dead. And again, kind of like in the movie and the book It, or at least the first It, where the town is kind of knows about this shit, but nobody wants to talk about it.
And there in Maine. Nobody talks about that.
Hate living.
Love you. Hate living.
Kinda wanna do gay stuff, but I don't know. See how night goes.
No homo though, Dad.
If it's own hand and not attached body, is it sex or masturbation? We find out.
People don't often know that there's actually a remake of this in the mid 90s with an all African American cast. It's called Beloved. Oprah was in it.
And Radong Chong, wasn't it?
It was the chick from The Truth About Charlie, who was Thandie Newton.
Thandie Newton, that's right. And I want to say it was Octavia Butler. Was it? Or no, Toni Morrison.
Yeah.
But it had Danny Glover, so I mean.
Yeah, Toni Morrison, another person to go to real feel good stories.
Yeah, true.
Speaking of that, were you going to say something, Linda?
No. I think I was going to transition the way you're transitioning.
Yes, speaking of glorious, beautiful stories.
Glorious.
Well, I think I'll take this turkey into a Native American cemetery.
Please do.
Thousands of years ago. Okay. The year is 2142. The EES Corporation has discovered and quarantined the infamous Pet Cemetery and Native Burial Ground. The site is now part of a large cloning facility led by Dr. Nicholas Gage. Cloning is the wave of the future, and this plant does it all. Taking DNA samples of once living pets, splicing it with the toxins from the soil from the Native American burial ground, forming not only the perfect clone, but a clone with a soul.
What?
But things go too far as the project's director, Martin Richman, decides to up the clone game and bring people back from the dead. His first clone is unwittingly taken DNA from Professor Dr. Nicholas Gage. Things soon become clear that not all is right with the stony earth of the cemetery, as these baby clones have been born with a twist of evil. Facing an army of cloned evil children, Nicholas Gage and his team must arm themselves and prepare for the fight of their lives. Starring Nicholas Cage as Nicholas Gage, Sean Penn as Martin Richman, Steve Buscemi as Janitor Jed Crandall, and William Dafoe as mercenary for hire Church. In the Michael Bay produced, Alejandro Jodorowsky directed Dark Side of the Cemetery, Pet Cemetery 3.
Okay. It's 10 hours long, so they should put it to Netflix.
Yes.
And is Nicolas Cage naked the whole time since it's Jodorowsky?
Yes, he's actually wearing a doctor's lab coat, and he's so naked the whole time, just free-balling it.
Did you know that Miko Hughes' acting career continued, and he went on to appear in the first Baby Geniuses as an adult?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and he was... on some show that I watch, but I'm trying to remember.
Nobody watches that show no more.
Well, as Linda tries to remember, I guess we'll go over to Adrian.
All right. Well, I'm going to correct the initial mistake, and I'm going to cast Bruce Campbell in the lead there as Lois. I think recast the neighbor there probably as Patrick McGee. For the wife, I'm gonna go with Tisa Farrow. I think I'm gonna get a soundtrack by Claudio Simonetti. A screenplay by Dardano Sacchetti. They shot in Maine for this. I think I would actually shoot in Athens, Georgia. And, I would give the director's chair to none other than Lucio Fulci. There would be 75% less dialogue and 100% more awesomeness.
Yeah. All right. Why
and
not?
And Pet Cemetery would be spelled correctly.
It's your own language and you can't spell it right.
Oh.
Actually, the Italian do like the demons approach and call it pets. But then in our U.S. Pet Cemetery.
The S could be an I, so it works in both languages. Yeah.
Yeah.
Demonia, demons. Yeah.
P-E-T-Z.
Yeah, an Italian cat's playing the cats. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, and I had to look it up. Gage was in an episode of Veronica Mars playing Stoner Dude Number One. But I didn't finish.
That's Veronica Mars. If you're a dude, you're either a stoner or a rapist.
I mean, isn't that real life?
Not all dudes, Linda.
Used to face in the early days.
Not all stoners. So anywho, sorry, I'm trying to like tell Carlo what I want for dinner. So anywho, my idea for the sequel is, and I actually put thought into it this time. I want Clancy Brown, of course, because I mean he's fucking Clancy Brown, and I want one certain Edward Furlong.
Oh wow, how'd you come up with this?
I don't know. It was like inspiration. The muse came to me.
I almost did this.
But in this one I want them to be playing stepfather and son. He's not like the friend of the stepson, he's actually the stepson. And so anyway, his mother and the stepfather's wife, passes away, right? And they move to this new house from Chicago, and, Edward Furlong's character is like, you know, I think Clancy Brown, because that's his character's name is Clancy Brown, Clancy Brown. He says, you know, you really stepped up and you're a really awesome hero of mine and a real idol. And is it okay if I call you Dad? And then he goes, oh, Eddie Furlong, playing Eddie Furlong. You are a real man. You know, I really respect you. You're a wonderful son. And are you okay with me calling you son? And they're like, oh, I was wishing you'd ask. And then they hug and they embrace and everything's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then undead Denise Crosby comes and kills them both. Because they're like, well, they see Denise Crosby out of the corner of their eye and they're like, oh fuck, she's oozing eye pus and she's all like Lucio Fulci's zombie. Like, I want to make out with her. No, I want to make out with her. What's that?
That is an appropriate reaction to Denise Crosby being within your vision. Yes.
But he's like, I want to make out with her. Hold back, son. You're just a boy. You're 15 years old. I'm going to make out with her. Like, and they fight over who's going to make out with her. And then she says, boys, you know, she's all rotting and stuff by this time. Like, I can make out with you both.
And they make her a finger trap?
Yes. They're like, what's the sound of a fucking a jar of mayonnaise? Oh, like, come find out. And so they're making out with her and she's butter. Like, I've got a knife. And
Cemetery 2 featuring a semen demon. All right.
Kevin Smith.
He treats Denise Crosby as the semen demon.
I'm the semen demon. Better keep me in the freezer. Who knows what'll happen?
Yes. semen. Pet Cemetery.
What are you
too.
Trying to do?
Semen.
That shit. It expires.
Direct to video.
Yeah. From the producers of Witchcraft.
Eddie Furlong, what are you doing these days? Oh, he's on Cameo, right? We looked this up.
I'm just saying, in Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, the character of John Connor is a hopeless junkie. Why didn't they cast Edward Furlong?
I mean...
Who the fuck was that guy?
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
I would rather have had seen him do that than have done that Uwe Boll movie he did.
Oh, that one where he's the semen demon?
No, the Attack on Wall Street one with what's his name there?
I just had to do a real quick Google search to find something when we came up with semen demon.
Oh, no. Don't. Listeners, don't look up semen
demon. Do you have a movie to order? Yeah.
I have a preview of a fake movie to show you both. I'm going to do that after the podcast.
So fair enough.
Yeah.
Like and subscribe.
And hit that bell.
Yeah, I guess it's that time, isn't it?
Wait, what did we learn?
Don't bring your family back from the fucking dead.
Never go to Maine. That's what I learned.
Sometimes it does. Oh, actually, I did learn the lesson that he was supposed to learn, besides sometimes that is battle.
Yeah, you only said it three times. Yeah.
Yeah, I could fix the whole movie with my lesson. My lesson came from right after they meet Fred Gwynne's character, Judd. Build a fucking fence.
Yeah.
Build a fucking fence.
Yeah.
Done.
Good fences make not undead kids.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to build a fence. That's going to be the best fence ever.
Gonna make them pay for the fence.
Keep my neighbors out.
I'm
it's
so
not as
tired.
If Fredder's going to put holes in the fence later and make this embarrassing.
I am so fucking tired of those goddamn trucks coming over to our lawn taking our kids.
You're messing with my glory hole fence, you bastards.
build a fence. Build a fence. And we're going to have the truckers build and pay for it.
The one where we got canceled.
I could ask for that, but I'm actually holding back.
Oh,
fuck. Hold back the night.
My laughing potion here. please listen.
I should have cast this as an episode of Murder She Wrote.
Right. Yeah. Can't review us.
Just make it a Golden Girls Go to Pet Cemetery.
Hey, great cast.
I would
they should
it.
Bury your vagina. It's been beaten enough. It'll come back new.
See, I think that we've waited long enough to bury them.
We still have one alive.
And she's the one who has to do it because every man has to bury their own.
So. Rate and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify or whatever.
On the Potify.
Potify.
Please review, rate, listen, subscribe, all that stuff. To Videorama podcast on Apple Podcasts because it helps other people find us and it helps with a lot of stuff. And we'll love you. Wouldn't you like to be loved? We can name you. We will thank you on air and stuff. It'll be really hot and hasn't your whole life been a search for love and understanding? We're here for you. also check out our Patreon at patreon.com/videoramapod. You can get lots of awesome stuff. I just finally released our theme song as a ringtone. We just had a special Halloween episode with tips and tricks on trick-or-treat safety, that stuff, and how to survive a haunted doll attack. The general public will be receiving that.
Well, any evil doll. It doesn't necessarily have to have a ghost.
Yeah, but it also helps advertise our Tim Thomerson Protection Agency.
Yes, our Tiny Tims.
Yes.
Or man doll, if you will.
Fall to the window.
We love us some Tim Thomerson. So also, if you like the show, please spread the word. We can use all the love we can get. Remember, you can find us on Twitter or you can visit our website if you go to videoramapod.com or you could just go to cageskiss.com because those assholes are kind enough to let us share their website. We also share it with Bedknobs and Broomflix. They do something with licks in the rear end. I don't know. You could also write to us at videoramapod@gmail.com and, check out my other podcast about witches in history and stories of all media. Oh, that's Bedknobs and Broomflix. Yes.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. She's got two podcasts. Look out. She's a witch.
I'm a witch. Also check me and Don Don out on the second season of Four's a Crowd. I think Don Don's been pressuring us to help those assholes out on Cage's Kiss soon because they have new material. And while we're at it, that whole Nicolas Cage playing the Tiger King thing, it's not going to happen, as it turns out.
Yeah, I figured.
Amazon trashed the project, so.
Thanks, Amazon. Thanks so much. Thanks for everything.
Julie Newmar.
Remember when they used to have movies and not bullshit?
There was a time. When Amazon Prime. That movie.
Where can the people find me?
Bullshit.
They can find me trashing fucking.
Let me drink some more wine. Adrian,
trashing
where the fuck
Michaels?
Are you?
I'm on damn DeviantArt already. Everybody knows where to find me. Fucking Leo the Fox on fucking DeviantArt. It's I make pictures. I make really fantasy, surreal type, macabre pictures, weird ass pictures with dudes in them.
He makes the good pictures.
Sometimes. Not hentai or furries.
See, it was not anymore. I sometimes make the good pictures. I'm on Patreon if you want me to have money, and I'm not if you don't, and I'm on YouTube, and Donnie did something.
Yeah, I have relocated. I'm no longer at the Arby's, the dumpster behind said Arby's. I'm now moved over somewhere else because of reasons, but you can find me as Unreal Goals on the Twitter or YouTube, where I have my audio drama horror story production there, which you should check out. It's got a lot of views, surprisingly, and I really do mean surprisingly. Other than that, yeah, I will be joining Forza Crowd with my sister for a while. And aside that terrifying bit of knowledge, I also would like to throw my hat in for supporting Semen Demons the world over.
It's our next movie.
Yes.
Join us on patreon.com/videoramapod.
SDLM.
If you support our Patreon, for every dollar you donate, we will send it to Denise Crosby to help keep the semen demon alive and well fed. Oh no, I said too much.
My lawyers would like to say that Video Rama Pod has not promised this. How about we could give her a quarter for every... No, fuck that. I'm greedy. Let's give her 10 cents on the dollar.
You were going to say 5 cents. You were going to sell her 5 cents. Our precious semen demon, 5 cents instead of 10, because she's not worth it in your eyes.
I mean, can't you just send her your semen?
He was helping you, Lieutenant Yar.
Save all your love for me.
Also, like me to let you know not to send your semen to Denise Crosby.
Please don't.
Yeah, she'll just get a rigid envelope. It won't make it there the way you want it.
Yeah. Like, she'll be like,
what's this shit? You know, is this cardstock? I don't know. It's got bubbles.
It's the Q-virus.
Smell.
Oh. So, God, where the fuck to go from there?
So, next week.
Next week we'll be having a guest. A very special guest.
All kinds of wrong lessons next week.
Yeah. And it'll be Thanksgiving for cats.
This has been a month of wrong lessons.
And once again, that's all we are, wrong lessons.
Yeah.
But until then, death to Videorama. Long live the new flesh. Donnie shot a kid.
Every time I masturbate, I quote this film and scream out loud, "You killer of children!"
I finish up, I just say, "No!"
God help me. God help me.